You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe, and we have a packed show for you this week. Firstly, now that we're all in lockdown again in the UK, and not only are many of the shops shut, but the postal service isn't always on top form either.
So, oh my goodness, you're out of the cage already.
You're so grumpy! I'm over it! But we
How many
are
seconds
going
are we in?
To look at things we can do in our houses for easy decorating wins that either don't involve tradesmen or lots of shopping. So things we can do to cheer ourselves up again.
And do you need cheering up, Kate Watson-Smythe? Is that the service we are providing
to
listeners?
Could you?
We're rescuing Kate from a downward spiral of despair.
I am in a downward spiral of despair. I am over it. Anyway, on with the rest of the show.
She needs a cold shower.
I do not need a cold shower. I need a big gin. We are also going to dive into the world of online interior design service, or e-design as it's often called, and find out exactly how that works and whether it might be right for you. And finally, this week's style surgery is all about small spaces and how to make them work, which I'm currently doing in the teeny tiny, awkwardly shaped office I have inherited now that I've swapped rooms with my 17-year-old, who's got my old office, which is a lovely big square room with a large window and a gold ceiling.
Yeah, not better.
I've got an 8x6 place with a new floor, which is currently being repaired. And so if there's background noise, it's him in his mask.
So let's crack on with the show. Easy wins. I'm loving the title of this segment. The idea, as Kate said, is to keep it easy. I feel like there's a really different energy to this lockdown this time round than the first lockdown. First lockdown, I felt like everyone went into hyperdrive and they were decorating and they were baking and they were doing power yoga and, oh my gosh, it was exhausting. And this lockdown, I'm finding people going much slower, doing a little bit of gentle crochet, maybe some watercolour. I mean, I've just got into reading books. It's insane. I think one of the advantages, if you like, of this period has been I've truly slowed down and had some headspace to do some slower stuff. So we're going to do some slow decorating, aren't we, in this episode, not put any more pressure on us. So what are your thoughts, Kate?
Well, obviously I have to do everything contrary-wise and backwards. So I spent the first lockdown lying down reading a book and not moving and taking it very slowly. And I've gone off at this one like a rocket, because obviously I've got this decorating going on.
Well, keeping it really simple for you then, because I can feel you're a woman on the verge of an overwhelm. I think just having some time to do some tidiness is actually a real deal breaker. So I've made a pact with myself to make my bed every morning and make sure the kitchen is clean and tidy every evening before I go to bed. That one slips. I won't deny it every now and then. But there's nothing nicer than padding down in the morning into a clean kitchen. I love it. So I'm sort of, you know, it sounds so obvious, but I can't tell you what little joys. I think it's finding joy in the little things. I mean, the other day, I hoovered my living room, like, vigorously. And I've got one of those, you know, big shaggy Moroccan Berber rugs. I got quite a sweat up, I'm not going to lie. But I wanted to, like, really deep clean. All the cushions came off the sofa. I got the nozzle attachment on. The skirting boards got done and all the nooks and crevices. And not only did I feel good because I had a workout, but the whole room just felt so much fresher and lovely. So, you know, just in terms of easy wins, you know, get your marigolds on, go for it and have a little workout. Makes you feel good.
I don't think that's going to work for me, Marigold. I tell you what I have done.
Get off your Peloton.
I tell you what I have done, which is only now I hear you speak, I realise I've done it. And that's kind of slowed down some of the sort of the rituals of the day. So now that, you know, we don't necessarily have to rush out of the house or go on the school run, you know, that has become a little bit slower. The getting up in the morning. I mean, obviously I've got teenagers. I mean, they're just about getting up at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But we have started to take a bit of time over breakfast or just brewing a nice cup of coffee and sitting down. We're not necessarily going to talk to each other. I mean, you know, some things aren't going to change over breakfast, but that kind of ritual of making a cup of coffee, having in a nice mug, possibly cracking open a milk jug, that kind of has been nice. And then at the other end of the day, rather than thinking, oh my God, it's late and I've got to get up in a rush in the morning, thinking, well, I might start my going to bed slightly earlier so I can remember to put on the hand cream and moisturise and then read a book. And so slowing down my kind of, if you like, my entry and exit from the day to try and bookend the day with a sort of slightly slower, more relaxing moment before you, you know, climb into the tumble dryer that is the 8 hours in the middle of frenetic chaos.
There's a lot in that. One of the best books that I've read over lockdown that I've just finished is Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty. Highly recommend that book. I absolutely loved it. He lived as a monk for 3 years in India and he's sharing what he learned there to apply very easily to modern day living. And one of the things is that the morning sets you up for the day. Yeah. And the monks, actually, they get up at 4 a.m. He's not expecting any of us to do that. But the point is they have a very slow start to the day, get up, move in silence, meditate, and then prepare breakfast and on with the day. But the thing is by having that gentle start means you go into the day with so much more positivity. And I was always the one who's pressing snooze on the alarm, getting up, trying to get my son up, trying to get him dressed and in the car and diddle and eating toast on the way there and all of that. And now I actually set my alarm to get up a full hour before my husband and my son, just so I can have an hour to myself. And like you say, and I have that coffee in my favourite mug and I read that book. Or, you know, I might do some exercise, but I have that time to myself and I'm loving it. So onwards with refreshing our homes. You want to know something else I've been up to while I've been polishing my halo lately? is sounding so virtuous, isn't it? I had a really great declutter at the weekend. I wasn't planning it. I was in my kitchen thinking I need to plan some meals for the week and probably do some batch cooking or something, which I didn't get round to because I ended up opening the door in the kitchen that keeps all the sort of, you know, lentils and pulses and pasta, and it all fell out. And there were half packets and pegs. And I was just like, I can't take this anymore. And I emptied every single store cupboard in my kitchen, cleaned the shelves and put everything back. And obviously got rid of the 2014 jar of horseradish that never got opened that found itself in the back of the cupboard and all of that kind of stuff.
It's probably still fine,
but
horseradish.
That felt amazing. You know, a bit of a declutter, which is essentially getting rid of anything that's sitting in the wrong place or anything that you don't need or indeed anything past its sell-by date. Very, very therapeutic.
Well, and obviously I've been forced into a declutter, much against my will and the 17-year-old's will with our big room swap. I mean, that was hard. I had to say to him about, I have to ask him to do every little thing 3 times. And then he's like, no, 100% going to do that later. What's later? Because I really, really do not want you to be decluttering your room at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to sleep. No, 100% going to do it before midnight. Great. Could you do it now at 6 p.m? Oh, no. No. So, you know, it's been hard. I haven't exactly found it relaxing, but I did learn something. I did a campaign with an organisation called recycleyourelectricals.org. This is a UK-based company. And I discovered that if it's got a plug on it, you can recycle it, which I suppose we might have vaguely known, but they sent me some quite staggering statistics. They've discovered there are 140 million cables in homes across the UK, which go around the earth 5 times over. Now, I think quite a lot of those were in his bedroom.
Wow. Let's just pause to draw a breath on that. How many times around the earth?
5.
Wow, that's astonishing.
Astonishing, isn't it? And the other thing they said, they reckon there are 31 million laptops in homes just not doing anything.
In the UK?
In the UK. So a lot of them can be remade or just broken down and recycled. And what you can do if you go on this website is they will tell you where your nearest electrical recycling place is. And they said that of those laptops sitting in houses doing nothing, if they were recycled, 980,000 tons of CO2 emissions would be saved, which is the equivalent. I need my drum roll. I need my stat jingle.
I'm feeling like there's an enormous stat about to come. You've got me on the edge of my seat.
This is the equivalent of taking 458,000 cars off the road.
You don't even
know your numbers up there, do you?
Again.
And if you then...
There's more.
75% of the materials found in small electrical goods can be recycled. So there's bits of gold, silver, aluminium and steel. So if all those 31 million laptops were recycled, there would be enough aluminium in them to make 159,000 bikes, enough steel for 12,000 playground swings, and enough plastic for 5 million defibrillators. So clear out your old electricals.
Oh, my goodness. Kate Watson-Smythe, you've definitely upgraded for 2021 in your statistics.
Yeah. She's back. Oh. I'm all mended. I've had some stats. But yes, so that is the key point. Pull out all those old cables and wires and get them to a recycling centre near you because it matters.
Yeah, amazing. And free up that space and tidy house and tidy mind and doing your bit for the planet. And all that is just going to make you feel like you're winning. Awesome. So on to some styling tips then. I was thinking about, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but it's always worth a little revisit, the concept of shopping your home. Now, one of my favourite little sort of styling hacks, if you like, is a tray. I love a tray. I love a tray. A tray on an ottoman, tray on a side table, dressing table, bedside table, where you can, and it's really nice if it's got a raised lip on it as well. Really like those trays, like the boxy square trays.
If it hasn't got a lip on it, isn't it just a plate?
No, you get trays, you know, tea trays that just have little tiny lips.
You want a deep tray.
You want a deep tray, not something you eat your dinner off. I'm not talking about plates. I'm talking about trays. You know what a tray is? Seriously, woman. Yeah, so trays with nice high sides work really well. And it's just a place to gather a pleasing amount of objets, Kate Watson-Smythe.
Oh, an objet. So, yes, I love an objet.
Your objets. So it might be a vase. It might be a little dish that you pop your earrings in. It could be some books. And it looks nice and it's pleasing and it brings things together and creates a bit of a styling moment, if you like. I'm such a fan of the tray. Vases is another area where you can have a bit of fun with styling. Regrouping them, moving around. It's a really good idea to have lots of different shapes, sizes. Odd numbers work really well. But in terms of like switching them about, this is something I haven't done for ages, but I remembered it today when I was thinking about this. Spray painting the inside of clear vases a colour can look really cool. So you just get a regular can of coloured spray paint, masking tape the top so it doesn't drip on the outside, and just spray the inside and completely change the colour of it. And you can even do it with old, clear, recycled, you know, pop bottles and things like that.
What happens when you put water in it for the flowers?
It's fine because, you know, spray paint is not water soluble. It's like enamel spray paint, like they use on cars and stuff. But you can get the crafting spray paint.
I'll tell you another one, which potentially would involve maybe spending a small amount of money, or if you've got a sewing machine, you could make. And it's this notion that I'm sort of desperate to go out for dinner again. Desperate to go out to a restaurant. And so obviously eating at home all the time, try and make that a little bit more special. Maybe light a candle. So if you've got candlesticks, or there's loads of tutorials suddenly have popped up about how to make candles.
Oh my gosh, you know, I've been seeing those on Instagram, and every time I see one, I think of you and your, first of all, disdain of a scented candle, and secondly, your complete fear that they're going to burn your house down.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, the thought that I just can't ever imagine you going to the trouble of making a blooming candle.
Now, I'm not going to make a candle, but I do actually light candles at dinner on the basis there's a very strict rule that as soon as the last person stood up from the table, that candle must be blown out. But, you know, trying to make your, you know, if we're all got to eat together all the time, make it as restaurant-y as we can. So I've got quite back into the napkin, the candlesticks, maybe
love
a few
and, like,
little
best,
flowers on the table.
China, right? I think this is something else.
Well, we've only got one set, but yes, I'm with you,
you know,
in principle.
Or just don't save your best stuff. Lots of people have the best stuff, whether it's the napkin or the china, or maybe it's the tablecloth, or the set of bed linen, I don't know, or a lovely cashmere blanket that you think, oh, it's so special, I must put it away and only use it for best. Get it out and use those things. And while you're having that lovely dinner, put on a gorgeous frock and a bit of lippy. You know, I think it's, you know, we have this stuff in our homes and it's just about elevating your Saturday night, isn't it? And
but I also think, you know, look at the sort of tradition of the Italian trattoria, you know, just a fairly humble bowl of pasta and a glass of rough red wine looks like something when you've got that red and white check tablecloth and that candle stuck in an empty bottle of wine.
So, and you're in Italy, surrounded by beautiful architecture.
Well, all right, but even just elevating... Elevating your own home. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, you can be having fried egg on toast, but have it on a nice plate.
Yeah, have it,
have it with a nice glass.
Get your spode china out.
Get your spode out for your fried eggs. And that, I think, just makes it all feel a bit nicer.
Yeah, I'm signing up to that this weekend. That's totally inspired me. Other ideas was just general switching things about. I was thinking there's always things like throws, cushions, rugs. I switched my living room rug and put it in my office at the end of last year. Completely made the room feel totally different. So it really helps if you've got your red thread in place. Anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, we've discussed this many a times on the podcast. There's our massive back catalogue for you there. But essentially, it means when you decorate your home, so yes, every room feels different, but kind of flows. It means you can move artwork, pictures, throws, rugs around. And I've, again, Emily Henson, who's an interior stylist, has been doing quite a lot of this on her Instagram. She said all her shoots have just been cancelled, so she's just got stuck in to styling her house because she's bored. So that's one place to see how it's done by the professional. She's doing a gorgeous job of switching things around. That's we'll put it in our show notes, of course, but that's Emily Henson. Oh no, Life Unstyled, isn't it? She's Life Unstyled on Instagram.
As Sophie says, if you've got your red threads, you've got some commonality in your colour scheme, you would be able to do that. You know, change your bedding. There's a seems to be a bit of a trend at the moment for really patterned bedding, which I'm loving. In fact, your spare room is very much like that.
Yeah, my guest bedroom's pattern on pattern on pattern.
And on the bed. And that suddenly feels really right for now. There's something about sort of crisp white sheets which doesn't feel quite right for now. It's not cozy, is it?
No, it's like you say, it's a bit too sterile maybe and starchy, and we want something that feels softer and cozy. And I think it feeds into that cottagecore trend as well, something that feels nostalgic and safe. We're all after a bit of nostalgia, aren't we, I think, right now, preferring to look back into times where we could leave our homes from our current situation. But I'm going to stop you looking back for now and urge everybody to look forward. I think if you are dissatisfied with how your home is at the moment and you're feeling frustrated that you can't get to the shops or you can't get the trades in, I think this winter time, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere is the perfect time to get a vision ready. So anything from vision boarding to getting on Pinterest, just get invigorated and inspired, I think is a great thing to spend January and February doing. And I know, Kate, you love a mood board, don't you? See,
that's,
I'm just
right
going to keep
street,
chipping away
it?
Until I see you do a mood board.
Keep chipping, love. Of course I haven't got a mood board. You keep working on that. We're not there yet. So do come and share your easy wins on Instagram, where I'm Mad About the House and she's Sophie Robinson Interiors. And of course, check out the Great Indoors podcast Facebook group, which is full of good ideas for this kind of thing, and indeed every other design question under the sun. And I will have a look and maybe I will get myself out of my lockdown rut.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
So another consequence of lockdown has been the fact that we are all beholden to our screens, and technology has been an amazing thing. I mean, look, here we are recording this podcast remotely from our laptops using Zoom and this fluffy microphone thing I've got in my hand. I mean, it's just incredible how we've all pivoted. So what's really fascinating is a lot of traditional interior designers who've always offered a face-to-face service are having to pivot quite quickly, aren't they, to offer online services.
It's really interesting, isn't it? So I spoke to Vanessa Anjimang of Copperdust, because I'd seen her talking on Instagram about offering an e-service. So I messaged her and I said, you know, how's this working for you? And she said she actually launched that as an idea in 2019 and it went nowhere. And so now suddenly, of course, it's become really popular. So she's redesigned her whole sort of offering to include e-design. And she thinks it's a really great way of doing it. And particularly, she has lots of clients who, and this I'm sure will ring a bell, with people who need to transform a room into a multi-purpose room. So she says for her redesign service, it's working really well, not as a kind of full-on renovation, but help and ideas. As she says, it's like a sort of personal design assistant to help you, you know, make a guest room into an office, or how to squeeze an office into your sitting room or bedroom. So she says that's one way it can work really well on kind of small ideas.
Yeah, and in terms of the companies who do sort of just specialise in e-design, it does seem to be more like we'll do a room. It never really offered as a whole house renovation project, because a lot of interior designers obviously get involved a lot more in the interior architecture, moving walls and working with your builder, and, you know, much more in-depth service. Whereas this is very much more, it's more interior decoration, isn't it? Layout, colour scheming and sort of procurement of furniture and furnishings.
I think that's how it has to work. So I spoke also to Fiona Duke of Fiona Duke Interiors, and she said that she doesn't feel it's right for her. She really needs the kind of real life contact, if you like. And she says, you know, you can do it remotely, but for her, real life gives you that bit extra. And she said, you know, the bits you miss if the Wi-Fi goes down or the screen glitches, or, you know, where your clients sort of look at each other and you might not notice that over a screen, but in real life you would feel the atmosphere. So you know, if you're on the right path. So it's more of a sort of joint procedure for her, where everyone is invested in it. And she feels that that might be quite tricky. So she said to me that she feels somehow with e-design, it's about finding quick answers rather than sort of traveling through the design together. So I think you're right. As a room, it can work, but maybe for a whole house, it's harder.
Well, I think it's just a different service. I think if you are going for face-to-face consultations with an interior designer, and it's really interesting that Fiona highlights that, a really big part of that process is the psychology, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the really digging down, getting to know someone's personality, their preferences. Quite often, I know Daniel Hopwood always used to say this to me. He felt more like a marriage counsellor. Like, well, you can have that if he can have that, and stop arguing over that because I'm telling you, you should have that. You know, there was a little bit of kind of like getting a couple on board with the same idea, especially if they've got very different design aesthetics, which is much easier to do in a real life meeting environment than something virtually, isn't it, I guess?
I have, though, again, talking to Emily Forney, who's sort of brilliant at colour. And I asked her because I thought, you know, colour is the one thing it's really difficult to do remotely, because, you know, you can tell someone to put a swatch on the wall, but you can't be there watching how the light changes in the room all the time. And, you know, so that's quite difficult. And she was really interesting. She said when she first started, she didn't really have a very, shall we say, the best opinion about remote interior design. But obviously she has been forced to change her mind over the last year and has done, I think, a farmhouse in Ireland and a flat in Portugal. And she's quite enjoying the variety of projects that she's doing without having to leave her own house. But she did have some tips. And she said the first thing she'd noticed, which I thought was really interesting, was that she said, and I'm just going to quote her here, I've seen how a two-hour remote consultation can pretty much solve most problems people have with their interiors, providing it's planned properly. And I think that was the key. And this is where you need to work out if it's right for you. Emily would like you to send her a floor plan, some pictures, maybe a video tour. You've got to be able to produce all that information, and you've got to be able to take accurate measurements if you want someone to come up with a design for some shelves or something. And then she says, you will have to order your own paint samples and maybe fabric samples. But what Emily says she will do is she will often order them as well, so that in the Zoom meeting, you can be looking at the same thing in the same natural light. And then maybe do a Pinterest board so you can give an idea of your style and what you like. So I thought those were really good tips if you are going down the e-design route, either because you've got one room, or because, you know, the world as it is doesn't permit you to do anything else.
Well, this is what designers like Emily are having to face. They're having to pivot from a real life service into an e-service. But actually, there are companies who've been doing this for quite a while and who've got this process nailed. Companies like My Bespoke Room, Room Lab, Topology, they're just a few of the companies here in the UK who've been offering an e-service for quite a long time. And they have very, very similar processes and really similar budgets as well. So I think for me, one of the things that sort of flagged up from as a positive for the e-service is it saves you money. It definitely comes across as a much more affordable option than a traditional interior designer, saving time and money. And for a lot of people who are very busy, I suppose there's a convenience to it at all. And this is also, this is going back to just designing one room here. I am, to be clear, I'm not talking about those interior designers who take on your whole house renovation, like a lot of...
Which, to be clear, Emily and Fiona probably are.
Yeah,
so there is a difference.
Yeah. So this is sort of picking paint, furniture, layout, finishes, that kind of thing. So if that's the size of your project, it's quite a compelling argument, isn't it? And this is being embraced by, you know, some of the real big companies as well. Neptune are a furniture brand. They do kitchens, bathroom furniture, paint, lighting. They even do soft furnishings now as well. And they've had a very successful interior design service. Have to say, their interior designers will only provide you with a shopping list for their products. They're yet to offer products outside their own range. However, it's something like £300 for the first room or something, and you get that refunded when you spend. So I think it's £5,000 with them, and with Neptune, you could quite easily do that.
Well, certainly, if you were doing a kitchen, I mean, that doesn't take long, does it?
Yeah, so I was interested to see how they've pivoted, and yes, they are now doing it online. They do videos to show you how to do your measurements correctly.
That is really key, because it's so difficult to measure properly. And you sort of think, I always think anyway, you know, that a centimetre here or there won't matter. And it really does.
Oh, it
so you
really
do
does.
Have to get that right. Yeah, that's very key.
So they
key.
Kind of hold your hand, if you like, through the online process, you know, with measurements, doing good videos and photography for their designers to use. And I asked them, I said, you know, are you going to be keeping this e-service as an option going forward? And they said, yes, it's been really successful. However, they don't feel it will ever replace going into a real store, meeting your designer face to face, and, you know, being in a shop surrounded by real inspiration.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And that comes back to what Fiona was saying, that, you know, you have to have a rapport with your interior designer if you're hiring one. And so you sort of do it together and create something.
I think it's absolutely fascinating that big brands like Neptune, all the way down to individual interior designers, are racing to get their companies working online. But for an insight into the tech and how this really works, I thought it'd be interesting to go to one of the originators. My Bespoke Room is number one on Houzz, and I had a chat with Laura, their founder. Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sophie. I'm delighted to be here.
And whereabouts are you? Whereabouts? I always like to know. Whereabouts in the country are you?
Well, I'm actually based down in Bournemouth, down on the south coast, currently huddled in my daughter's bedroom.
Have you made yourself a duvet
I
den?
I have made myself a duvet den. In fact, I might just fall asleep. So I'm only kidding.
Okay, well, don't do that yet. So just give us a quick recap about what is Bespoke Room? What does it offer?
So My Bespoke Room offers professional interior design conveniently online and at a fraction of the price of traditional services.
That's the idea. Although speaking to a couple of sort of traditional interior designers, they said one of the things they are missing is the depth of interaction you get, the subtle cues you get when you interview your client face to face. Because obviously you employ professional interior designers who will have had similar training, but did they ever give you any feedback on how difficult it is to read somebody online?
Well, I think the most important thing is e-design or online design, it doesn't mean it's not personal. How we find we can build that personal rapport is we first of all get customers to fill in like a really easy online brief so that we can get to know them a little bit better. And then I think we've all become overly familiar with Zoom and video conferencing in this pandemic. So I think it's really important to have a video call or a phone call to dig a little bit deeper into those preferences that the customer has and really nail those important details. Communication is absolutely key. So for us, we've got this really whizzy chat function so that designers and consumers can communicate back and forth in real time, and it makes it super easy and efficient.
One of the concerns that was thrown up about an e-design service is if you don't have an interior designer visit your home, then they're not going to get that feel of a space. They're not going to see the aspect, the way the light falls through the window, whether it's a particularly dark room or light room. How do your designers, again, try and get around that hurdle?
Designers are highly skilled at that. So I think, you know, we personally ask our customers to send a little video, you know, maybe walking through the front door. We ask for photographs. And, you know, there's an amazing tool called Google out there. So we can Google Earth people's properties and see if it's north facing, south facing gardens, etc. I think just, you know, technology has just broken down those barriers. So
technology's got an answer for everything.
It does.
It's quite extraordinary.
It does. So, you know, I know that maybe it's a worry for customers out there, but honestly, we don't find that a problem at all.
One of the things that people get most worried about is having to do the measurements and all of that kind of thing themselves when you don't have somebody come to visit your house. How do you support people doing that?
So we've got a couple of different ways we do it. We have a sort of handy measuring guide and a little video that explains how to best take room measurements. There's also some really good apps you can download. Some of them are more accurate than others. So we do always ask our customers to sort of sense check those dimensions. Some customers forget it's not just about the room they're in. It's also about how do you actually get the sofa through the front door and into your living room. So it's about all of the access points around the house. And that's really important to cover too.
And then talk to me about how the fee structure works, because it can be traditionally a little bit cloak and dagger, but you offer a set fee to design a room, right? And then is the budget, is there any markup on any of the products you sell? How does that work?
So I think you're completely right. I think how to price your services is a really big headache for so many designers. And there's lots of different ways you can approach it. But the approach we've taken is complete transparency. So we pioneered flat fee room design packages. And we're really open with this is the price and this is what you get. And you know what? If you want a little bit extra, you can tap on a few extra hours. But we make the majority of our money from the trade discount we get when customers go on and buy furniture. But really importantly, we share some of that discount back to the customer. So ultimately, they get this brilliant, affordable design service and they get to purchase their furniture for a slightly lesser price.
Sounds almost too good to be true.
I promise you it's not. It's lots and lots of hard work.
I'm really interested with how, because I know you're kind of at the forefront of the tech end of this and facilitating this. And I know you're launching, is it Design Pal Pro that's launching this month?
Yes, yes. So we're launching Design Pal Pro. And basically what's happened is we've spent a long time over the last few years developing some tech that really sits in the background. So what it does is it makes the consumer experience easy and time efficient. But for the designer, I'm sure you're aware, Sophie, but like designers traditionally spend about 80% of their time on admin, which just seems crazy in today's world. And they want to spend their time focusing on what they love and what they're good at, which is designing and chatting to their clients. And ultimately, our tech has automated a lot of what designers do in the background. For example, our tech goes out and it pulls in all of the products across all of the different retailers automatically overnight. So imagine a supercharged Google search engine for interior designers. It's all curated with the best products across the board. And then they simply search the products they're looking for and drag and drop them into room designs. That's just like one example of what the tech does.
And what's brilliant is obviously you design this for professional interior designers. And I know we have a lot of professional interior designers listen to this podcast, but also it is a tool that can be used by just someone doing up their house themselves.
Absolutely. So it's all been designed for professional designers. However, what we found is that there's so many passionate entrepreneurs out there that just have an amazing skill at doing up their own homes. Friends and family are asking them to do the same. So this tool can be used by them as well to really turn their passion into a little bit of profit.
The other really interesting thing, I think, that, you know, we're perhaps getting more increasingly aware of, again, during this pandemic and lockdown, is how much we can order that can be delivered. You know,
yes.
I have little Christmas parcels arrive daily.
Yes.
At the house. I know. It's amazing. And I suppose your e-service really taps into that literally you can pretty much order anything online right now. However, the flip side of that is just the sheer feeling of overwhelm. So I suppose in one way, it's a blessing and a curse. How does the sort of e-InDesign help people slice through that?
Well, that's the designer's job. The designer's job is to create the high street and trade-only suppliers and pick the right items for you. I mean, ultimately, that's what you're paying for. But I know certainly for me, Amazon has changed my perception, and I think everyone's perception on how goods should be delivered. But I think retailers are slowly catching up. And ultimately, I see it as a benefit. And I really think that in the future, retail high street is going to change. I think we're going to see fewer shops, but maybe larger shops that have full ranges stocked with better experiences out there. But I really think we're all going to start to shop online now.
And so we'll see less 3D real life stores on the high street.
I think we will see less of them. I mean, I used to work in retail in my previous life, and, you know, I'm a massive fan of being able to pop into store and sit on a sofa and touch and feel fabrics. But I think we're going to start purchasing through visualization in the future. I'm sure of it. But I do think the high street will still be around in some form. I really do. But my prediction is that there will be fewer stores. Maybe, you know, retailers will only have one or two larger stores that you can go and fully immerse yourself in the brand and the experience.
Yeah, and if I'm going to buy a sofa, I want to sit on it and check it's comfortable. And similarly with a new mattress, that's something else that I feel like, you know, those big investment buys that rely on feeling good and being comfortable.
Yeah, I think totally. I mean, that is definitely the preference. However, I think retailers are now offering, like, I think you can sleep on a mattress for 100 days now and then return it. And, you know, loads of the sofa companies out there we know are doing quibble-free returns. So it almost takes the risk factor out and you can try it in the comfort of your own home. So I do think there are some benefits from shopping online too.
It sort of then brings my thoughts back to sustainability, all this fabulous online consumerism we can all get excited about. But it is something that, you know, I know for sure our listeners are more increasingly on their radar, making not just purchases that look and feel great, but are the right thing to do in terms of the environment and the planet and sustainability. Is that something that your designers feel that their customers are feeding back to them? And indeed, is that something that you're able to advise your clients about?
Yeah, I think it's something we're seeing more and more of, and we're talking to our clients more and more about. You know, we're big advocates for saying, like, is there anything in your home you can upcycle or you can keep and use? And, you know, we can keep a little bit of old with new. And we do what we can. It is challenging. I think some retailers are better at providing more sustainable products than others. So I think it's there's a little bit of catch-up work to do there, but we do what we can. And in fact, we just designed last year our first vegan home for the lovely Jasmine Harmon. So that was an interesting project for us.
Oh, wow. What? So everything procured was vegan approved?
Well, it was vegan approved as much as we could. I think when it comes to some glues and furniture, it's not vegan approved. But sometimes you can't go completely vegan or you can go completely sustainable. But, you know, it's just if you can make a few great choices along the way, I think it all builds up and makes a difference.
Oh, Laura, thank you so much. Absolutely fascinating insights.
Oh, Sophie, thank you so much for having me and Kate too. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
And good news is Laura has very kindly offered listeners a little discount. You can use the coupon code GREATINDOORS10 to get 10% off any of the design packages over on My Bespoke Room. And for any passionate entrepreneurs or professional interior designers who fancy giving Design Pal Pro a go, use that coupon code to get your first month free. We've popped some links, terms and conditions down on our show notes, and of course the links will also be on our blogs.
Thanks so much to Laura of My Bespoke Room. And if you've had any experience of e-design service, do come and share it with us. We'd love to know what you found to be the pluses, any minuses, and also if you've got any advice you'd like to share with anyone else who might be tempted to try.
Now, we haven't had one for a while, but back by popular demand is our juicy style surgery. And this particular problem comes from Hannah, who is a geography student in Bern in Switzerland, and who wrote to us to first of all say, and I quote, "Who wouldn't want to listen to two mad English women fighting over feature walls and yellow kitchens?"
I don't know what she means.
Anyway, I go on. This is what she had to say.
Hi, Kate and Sophie. First of all, I just really want to say a huge thanks to both of you for the podcast. So my question is about tiny houses, because over the summer, I helped my boyfriend decorate and run his Airbnbs on the Causeway Coast in Northern Ireland. And he has a few of these tiny houses, but I found they can be quite tricky to decorate. So I know in some episodes you've touched on small spaces, but I found that there are some other issues, like dealing with strange walls, for example, curved walls in camping pods or slanted ones in A-frame cabins. So anyways, I was wondering if you had any tips or design crimes on decorating such small and but also quirky spaces. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for that question, Hannah. I mean, that's really topical because we get asked about small spaces a lot. I mean, not necessarily for Airbnbs, but also people in small apartments, in box rooms. Working with tiny spaces is a problem for many of us. So where to start?
Well, I always think of it a bit like a caravan when I'm designing
small
spaces.
That's a good idea, yeah.
And I think, you know, you've got to be multifunctional, fold away, compact, slimline furniture, no bulky arms, no bulky pieces of furniture, and everything's kept quite tidy and neat.
I mean, that's actually a good point, isn't it? Just the slimline furniture. It doesn't matter what size your room is. I mean, take a sofa. You know, we see lots of those sofas with really big, wide arms, and they really dominate the space. You know, if you've got slim arms, that's more sitting space. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a small room that you're trying to furnish, but any room, you know, slimline furniture can look a little more elegant and just not dominate the space quite so much.
Well, there we go. You got me straight into a design crime from the get-go, ooh, haven't you? I think, you know, that is one of my design crimes, is seeing those really puffed up, inflated, ginormous, fat three-piece suites in small living rooms. I mean, what is that all about? Design crime right there.
If you can have furniture, you know, on a bit of a leg so you can see the floor, a bit of space underneath it, because those big, heavy sofas that sit flat to the floor, I mean, it just looks like the QE2 sort of landed in the middle of your room, doesn't it? You want a bit of lightness, a bit of floor space. So, you know, slim arms, tall legs, see underneath. That is going to make the space feel bigger.
Yeah, and avoid those sort of really big boxy chest-like coffee tables, although they can be useful if they're used for storage. I tend to think those sort of chest coffee tables end up being used as dumping grounds because they're not very practical. But like a glass coffee table, if you can, anything where your eye travels through it is going to help the space feel a bit bigger. So like 1950s furniture, mid-century, works a treat.
That works really well because it's slimline. And also the furniture is quite plain, you know, it's not sort of all carved and ornate, and that helps as well. And those coffee tables, you've seen them, they're kind of made from wire or steel or something, aren't they, with a top on them, and that allows the light to travel through it. So that can be a really good way of doing it. And they're also quite often light enough to move around. I mean, those chest ones, as you say, they're heavy, they've got no legs, they dominate the space. And if you've got anything on top, you can't get to the things you've stored inside them anyway. So, yeah. So something where you can see. Sometimes people talk a lot about wanting lots of storage, but when you don't see it, you know, out of sight, out of mind, there's a real argument in a small space for having things on display or on open shelves, because it forces you to declutter or not keep storing rubbish. You know, if it's there, it has to earn its place in your space.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you know, let's move from the caravan analogy onto a ship, shall we?
I'm looking forward to the planes, trains and automobiles segment that we'll be following shortly.
Well, you know, if you're designing a ship, or indeed on a ship, you would, or boat, you wouldn't have anything on there that wasn't useful, would you? Yeah. You've got no space for it at all. So again, I think in very compact spaces, you really can only afford to have the things that you've got a use for. And rather than having more storage, which just crams everything in and you can't get to the back of the cupboard and so it never gets used, just be really, really strict. And then, yeah, use open shelving to display some things that look nice. But I think overall, in terms of a design look, if you like, I think it is pared back, does tend to work a bit better. And I mean, this is me saying this, I miss clutter nutter, like more is more is more. But in a small space, I think sometimes just a couple of strong style statements, one fabulous piece of artwork, a couple of really popping cushions rather than lots of little itty bitty ones, you know, can bring in the design in a lovely, strong and inspirational way. Because small spaces do not have to be meek and timid. They can be full on and fabulous. But less of the little itty bitty and more of the couple of big impact statements, I'd say.
I think you're absolutely right. I think small in a small space can look much worse. You know, you can have one big plant, one big statement light. And actually, I'd go further and say, in a small space, I wouldn't necessarily have a gallery wall, because again, that's lots of little small things. Just have one big picture. So fewer bigger things will have much more impact than lots of little tiny things. And also, banging my white paint drum again, but I would say that try and keep your, maybe your woodwork, your ceiling and your walls all the same colour. That won't break it up. You know, if you've chosen a strong colour, it doesn't have to be dark, but if you've got a colour on your walls and then you're sort of outlining the edges of the room with the white skirting board and the white door and maybe a white picture rail if it's an old building, you are sort of drawing your attention to the edges and the limitations of the space. If you paint it all out in one colour, it will look bigger.
And you can use colour as well to disguise those awkward corners, be it an attic ceiling or the curved wall of a camping pod or an A-frame, indeed any kind of weird architectural detail. My advice is just paint it all out in one colour. Window frame, architrave, all the walls, and it kind of paints the problem away.
Of course, we want to help with your style surgery queries too. So just send a voice note to thegreatindoorspod@gmail.com and we'll see what we can do.
But for now, don't forget to check out our blogs for pics and links and all sorts of helpful extras. I'm sophierobinson.co.uk and she's madabouthehouse.com.
And do give us a shout out about the show on social media if you can. I don't know if it's January thing or a lockdown thing, but everybody seems to be talking about interiors at the moment. So if you know of anyone who could do with a dose of expert but never precious or pompous insight, then send them our way.
Till next time, thanks to our producer, Kate Taylor of Feast Collective, and to you for listening.
And we'll see you in the great indoors. So I don't know why
you
want...
Why don't you say, this is the perfect question because we get asked about tiny spaces a lot. So, thank her. Say, this is brilliant because we get asked this a lot.
Thank you.
And maybe just say as well, not just for holiday lets, just, you know...
Yeah.
People
for all
in apartments.
Of us.
No, open it up and say apartments, flats. Mm. But, you know, box rooms, whatever.
Thanks so
much. Should I keep talking?
Shut up!